Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The federal court ruling yesterday ordering a halt to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is more evidence that gay rights are not just for policymakers, but issues of constitutional law. Ironically, it looks like President Obama, who is also trying to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, is going to appeal this ruling through the Justice Department. Just last week, the Supreme Court heard another case with similar overtones. Did an offensive protester who led demonstrations at the funeral of a gay serviceman violate the deceased family's right to privacy or just exercise his own constitutional right to free speech? Let's talk about it with Jamie Floyd. You may know Jamie best as a sometimes substitute host of this program on days when I'm not here. She has also been a lawyer and a host and analyst on the legal cable TV channel called True TV. And lately, Jamie's been blogging on our new politics website. It's a freecountry.org. So we'll talk about her blog posts on the Supreme Court case and on celebrity involvement in politics, like Lady Gaga's grassroots video campaign to help repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and Jon Stewart's upcoming rally to restore sanity. Hey, Jamie, welcome back to the guest chair.
Great to be here on the other side of the mic.
The same federal judge in California who struck down, who said Don't Ask, Don't Tell must end yesterday, had already ruled the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy unconstitutional. So what's the significance of yesterday's ruling?
Well, she is a graduate of my alma mater as well, Berkeley Law School. I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, I worked on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I worked in the Clinton White House in 1993. And to remind everyone how this came about, when Bill Clinton came into office, he wanted to lift entirely the ban on service by gays in the military. People should remember that. And so Don't Ask, Don't Tell was, of course, one of these, I think, silly compromises, these centrist compromises that came about when the military and then chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Colin Powell, reacted against that, saying, no, we can't have gays in the military. And so Don't Ask, Don't Tell was born of that. Now, I was at that time an advisor, and I argued then this is not constitutional. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is not constitutional. Fast forward 17 years.
17 years later.
And we have a judge who says out in California this is not constitutional. But, Brian, getting to the point of every issue you've raised today, the constitutional issues and the political issues are not always the same, right?
Right.
And so what has happened today, or I guess late yesterday, is that Barack Obama is now put in the uncomfortable position, and his administration is put in the uncomfortable position of defending the constitutional issue of the same policy that they would like to see repealed.
Right.
And
what,
you have the political strategy on the one hand, mm-hmm. and you have the very real constitutional issues on the other. So the judge has sort of put them in this very, very awkward position.
But why would the Obama Justice Department do even that? You just said, as a Clinton advisor, you thought Don't Ask, Don't Tell was unconstitutional. I imagine Barack Obama over dinner with Michelle, or maybe not the girls, says that it's unconstitutional, and yet they're going to turn around and defend it in court.
Well, first of all, whenever there is a congressional action and it is declared unconstitutional by a judge, it's almost automatic that an administration, and any administration, regardless of party, will defend that constitutional action. I imagine they will delay because the midterms are coming up. So we've got 20 days to the midterms. They've got 60 days to appeal. I don't think we're going to see that appeal until, I guess what, 21 days, Brian?
Yeah,
you think 22 days?
I hear what you're saying.
But
they'll try to do it, you know, late on a Friday afternoon.
Late on it, right. So that your program won't pick it up till Monday.
Exactly.
But I think they're also loath to have, and a smart constitutional law scholar like Barack Obama is loath to have a judge, and even I, who think this is unconstitutional, we're loath to have a judge step into the political process where Congress and essentially the voters have decided that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is the policy. Congress should then decide that it is no longer the policy. And we know that in December, the military is going to offer to Congress a report including military families, those who are serving, their feelings about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And Congress is supposed to come up with a slow-moving plan to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And Barack Obama, I believe, and his administration are of the view that that is the way to go, a political repeal rather than the sledgehammer of the law.
But the ruling that the judge came down with yesterday would stop Don't Ask, Don't Tell in its tracks.
It has stopped it.
Today.
It is, in effect, stopped. It is a legal injunction, and the federal government and therefore the military can no longer pursue Don't Ask, Don't Tell as of now.
You know what I want to know? This is kind of an aside, but I read a stat that about 14,000 gay or lesbian members of the armed forces have been expelled for telling under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But do you know the number of people who've been expelled for asking?
I imagine it's zero.
It is zero.
I only took a good guess because you asked the question.
And I think that they have been asking in all kinds of subtle ways, maybe inadvertent, like, you want to go to the strip joint with me, Joey? And
you know,
put people in untenable positions.
Want
to go pick up some girls?
It's a ridiculous, pardon the expression, ass backwards policy. I mean, it requires that you be dishonest about who you are fundamentally. It requires that people poke around in your personal business. And you make precisely the right point. Don't ask, don't tell. But only the don't tell is punished. And it's certainly time that we reconsider and repeal.
And I understand what you just said about the Obama administration preferring to have this go through the legislative process. And depending on the outcome of the election, depending on what the Joint Chiefs come down with their report next January, it may well be that Congress will act. I'm not actually confident about
it. I'm not either.
But there is a legal argument for not appealing the judge's decision. You know, this came up. This came up in the New York State Attorney General campaign. Did you notice that? Kathleen Rice, in the primary that she lost to Eric Schneiderman, said if elected, she would refuse to enforce the law against gay marriage in New York State because she sees it as unconstitutional. She said that's the only law that she sees as so egregious in New York State that she would refuse to enforce it as state attorney general. So there is at least some political precedent if the president wanted to just let the judge's ruling stand.
Absolutely. And I didn't mean to suggest that the Department of Justice is required to appeal. I only said that it is generally the case, and almost always the case as a political matter, that they do appeal. But they're not required to appeal. I would suggest that as a strategic matter, we will see parallel pursuit of the legal course on Don't Ask, Don't Tell by the Department of Justice, and then the political pursuit of the matter with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and Secretary Gates.
Jamie Floyd, my guest on WNYC, former Clinton advisor, former True TV legal analyst, blogger at our New Politics website, and you should go see Jamie's collection of posts so far at itsafreecountry.org. And you blogged about the Phelps case, taking a position, again, that you would rather oppose on the content of what came before the Supreme Court.
Well, these are very, very hard cases, and this is why I'm so grateful that we have a Constitution. This is the kind of case that proves that America works, the Phelps case. And people like Phelps remind us why we have a Constitution. It's precisely the fact that we have a sympathetic petitioner. We have a sympathetic father of a fallen Marine, precisely the kind of man you want to prevail in the U.S. Supreme Court, who I believe should not prevail in the U.S. Supreme Court. The Constitution is on the side of the despicable speech in this case because the First Amendment was placed in the Constitution to protect not the speech of the majority, but the speech of the fringe element, the speech of the minority, the speech that we least like, and that would be the speech of Pastor Phelps.
But at the funeral of a deceased
yes.
member of
yes.
the United States Armed Forces, they could at least regulate it under the Constitution. This comes up at protests at abortion clinics and
yes.
things like that, right? X number of yards away from the gravestone or whatever?
It can, and it was regulated. And in this case, and I know some of your listeners are getting riled up hearing me. I know. And this is the kind of case that really riles the passions of people, which is why we have a U.S. Supreme Court, which is why we have a 9, I pray, dispassionate justices hearing the case. There are time, place, and manner restrictions. He was 1,000 feet away. The record is clear that the people attending the funeral could not see the signs and did not see the signs as they entered. And that's why the state or a local jurisdiction in some cases can impose restrictions on speech. You can't get right in someone's face at a funeral or even on the subway and begin to shout epithets or insults. The First Amendment doesn't protect that.
But then the father sued that Phelps could not even what? Come within 1,000 feet?
He cannot come within 1,000 feet in that jurisdiction. That's correct, in Maryland.
What did he say should be the guideline?
Well, the father says that in this case, I'm a private citizen. And here's the real question, and this is why I think the Supreme Court took the case. In the intentional infliction of emotional distress tort, this started out as a civil case.
Right.
And this is what I think has been lost in the reporting. He sued and he won almost $11 million because it's so offensive.
For pain and suffering.
For pain and suffering. But the cases thus far have all involved public figures. And the famous case, of course, is the Jerry Falwell, Larry Flint case, where the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm talking a conservative U.S. Supreme Court with Justice Rehnquist at the helm, came down unanimously on the side of who? On the side of Flint. And they said, listen, it's offensive.
Hustler
magazine. And it was
offensive
disgusting.
For a living.
It was disgusting what was printed. But they came down on the side of the offensive speech.
Right.
The question here, though, is we have a private, entirely sympathetic citizen. And so now the question is, can you have that same exact case, but with a private citizen who did nothing to insert himself into the public
and
eye?
Privacy is a right that's also derived from the First Amendment.
Well, that's what I think has been somewhat misreported. This is not a privacy case with a capital P. He only raised privacy in the context of the appeal. Originally, he sued for money damages.
Like Roe versus Wade was decided on privacy.
It was, but that's a different kind of privacy. And the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress, it goes way back to common law. It's more like assault.
By the way, did I get one of the facts wrong? The Marine himself, the deceased Marine,
yes,
was not gay. He was just using Phelps was using the...
No, these people aren't gay. They just choose a random funeral.
A random funeral,
yes,
of a service member.
Yes, a random funeral, which makes it even more offensive. And it all started, of course, with Matthew Shepard. They went to the young man in Wyoming, young gay man
who had been murdered.
It was a hate crime, which drew attention, of course, to hate crimes against gay Americans. And that's when Phelps, ironically, or not so ironically, came to the public consciousness. He chooses these cases, these random funerals, precisely because of the political speech he can create. And that's what makes it protected by the First Amendment.
We're over time, but...
I'm always over time when I'm at this microphone, as your producers know.
You're great. and that's why we keep you over time. But you blogged about the coming John Stewart rally.
Oh, another controversial blog. My blogs are always a little controversial.
Well, I don't
get it. Why are all these people following? I mean, listen, I love John Stewart. I love the show. But he's a comedian.
Well, he walks a line between doing comedy and being a genuine response to Glenn Beck's rally in Washington, D.C.
Another comedian. Glenn Beck. Does anybody remember that Glenn Beck was a comedian? Am I the only one who remembers
you see
the man
the
was
Glenn
a comedian?
Beck show in the same light as you see Jon Stewart's Daily Show?
They're comedians. The March on Washington was the march. There was an original March on Washington. We all remember that.
That was the March on Washington. Martin Luther King. But
yes,
the Glenn Beck, that was a very earnest rally.
Yeah.
Like it or not.
I suppose. Everything Glenn Beck does is earnest. The man cries on television almost every day.
And Jon Stewart, just as he's about to get a little bit too earnest for himself, he goes wacky. But look, he improvises around that line every night on his show. And I suspect that even the people who will attend, however many thousands of people it turns out to be, maybe even Stewart and his producers themselves, may be ad-libbing the definition of the line between seriousness and comedy, even as they plan and stage the event. But I think it's purposeful and it's good.
I do. I here's what I think. I think that Jon Stewart has done a tremendous amount to raise the consciousness, especially of a certain demographic that had tuned out in the lead up to the last election, the last presidential election. But I also think that Jon Stewart would agree that we have a lack of leadership on some level in this country, if we have to be following comedians to Washington, D.C., and we have to be following comedians to the voting booth.
And Jon Stewart, I'm sure, would make the distinction. I would certainly make the distinction between comedy and satire.
Yes.
That comedy just pokes fun at whatever silliness of the moment the comedian can find. Satire has a serious point underlying it, and Stewart is certainly a satirist.
And it's hard work. It's hard work to do satire well.
Folks, if you want to know more about what Jamie Floyd thinks about these things, you will just have to read her blog posts at our New Politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Jamie, great to talk to you.
And take the quiz, the news quiz.
Yeah, news and politics quiz. We have a always fun 10-question quiz about food stamps up there right now. Kind of hooked to Mayor Bloomberg's desire to ban soda and other sweetened beverages from food stamp purchases. But when we continue in a minute, it's a call in for Chileans. What would you tell the rescued miners about the 2 months they missed? Stay tuned.